Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. It's great to have your company. Are you a FIFO worker? Or maybe someone you know or love is? The financial rewards of such work are well known. But there's a flip side. FIFO can come at a big cost not only to the worker, but also their family. And at its worst, it can even contribute to suicides. A new report has found one third of FIFO resource workers in WA experience high levels of psychological distress, compared to half that level for the general population. The research involved surveys with 3,000 FIFO workers, 400 of their partners, and 300 former FIFO workers. As well as high levels of psychological distress, the research found they also suffered more incidents of bullying and higher levels of burnout than non-FIFO workers. The report suggests a number of measures to help tackle the problem. They include shorter work rosters, permanent rooms at accommodation camps, and providing support programs. The WA government appears keen to use the carrot approach to get the sector to improve practices. But it says if that doesn't work, it could consider the stick approach. And a voluntary code of conduct currently being drafted to improve workers' mental health could be made mandatory. So how do we create a safer workplace where workers' well-being and mental health is a priority? That's our focus today.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Perth.
And I'm joined today on the panel by Professor Sharon Parker. She was the lead author of that report. It's called Impact of FIFO Work Arrangements on the Mental Health and Wellbeing of FIFO Workers. And joining us from the ABC's Albany studio is Matt Skeet. He worked as a FIFO driller for many years. He now manages his own company where he's got FIFO drillers on his books. Matt, you've worked FIFO. Tell us your experience.
Yeah, hi, morning, Jess. Yep. I was FIFO as an employee for about 5 or 6 years before we started our own business. So I guess that period of my life is the best comparison to what we're seeing in this report, in that I was out in the field and perhaps exposed to the same sorts of things that these guys are today now. And what a shocking statistic that a third of them are experiencing that level of stress.
Tell me a bit about the impact. You had an issue when you your wife was about to have your eldest baby, is that right?
Yes. So that was after we started the business, but I was out in the field a lot at that stage trying to get things running. And we had a little girl. She was 4 or 5 months old at the time, and we started experiencing just petite mal seizures, but still very scary. And my wife was very alone through all of that, so definitely I have felt what it's like for families at home when the father or mother often is out working and there is a family catastrophe where you can feel very isolated and alone in your own home.
We want you to be part of the conversation. Give me a call. What's your FIFO experience, good or bad? We want the ugly and the benefits. The talkback number is 1300 222 720, or you can send me a text on 0437 922 720. So, Matt, in terms of that, do you think it was harder on your wife and children than yourself, or was it hard on both of you?
I think I was incredibly focused on my work at the time, so my wife bore the brunt of FIFO at that period of our lives. She's often said that she felt like a solo parent through all of that, in a town where she didn't have family support or anything to help her through this period of her life. So definitely the people at home have definitely got to be considered, because, like I said, they can feel very isolated in their own homes, which is awful.
And I'm talking to Matt Skeet. He's coming through from the Albany studio for us. He used to work as a FIFO driller. He now manages his own company where he's got FIFO drillers on his books. In terms of the transition to get out of the FIFO lifestyle, I know you're still sort of at arm's length with it, managing people. Was that a very conscious decision from you and your wife to transition out of it and be managing your own company?
I think more so for my wife it was a conscious decision, but for me it was just a matter of evolution, really. I was focused on the business, perhaps selfishly, and just trying to grow the business. And as it grew, it meant that there was a position required in a home base in town to support the crews out in the field. So that's how it happened for us. But I do think that a lot of FIFO people should have an exit strategy, especially if they're not coping at the time.
More on that soon. It's 10 past 10. You're on the Focus program with Jessica Strutt. And today we're talking about FIFO. What's your experience? Give us a call or send us an SMS. Now, Sharon, you were the lead author of this report. How big exactly is this risk to FIFO workers?
Yes, thanks, Jess, for inviting me on the show. If I can just first comment that there was a team of people working on this report, and we had suicide experts and we had mental health experts. We had people who specialise in alcohol and drug use, which is also an important topic that we can discuss. We had social workers and so on. So we had a very multidisciplinary team. And I also just would like to note that we had a reference group which included union members, Lifeline, Chamber of Minerals and Energy, representatives from the big companies and things. So the research was informed by a wide range of voices.
As it should be. So that's good to hear. Fantastic. And I've read, obviously, a large portion of it, and I could see there was a wide industry input on the report.
But there certainly is a risk. And you've already given the statistic that one third of FIFO workers experience psychological distress. And this is assessed using a measure that has been widely validated and linked to clinical diagnoses, actually, of anxiety and depression. And the items, I think, just to make it a bit more real, you know, what we ask people is how often do they feel things like how often do they feel worthless? How often do they feel like it's not worth getting out of bed, or that things are too much effort, or that they're just tired for no reason, that they're feeling anxious, feeling depressed? And large numbers, one third of our sample of more than 3,000 people scored high or very high on this measure. And I actually just, Matt was talking about his family. It's also important to note that the figure was actually the same for FIFO partners. So one third of FIFO partners, and we surveyed more than 300, reported high or very high levels of distress as well. So they are suffering, exactly as Matt's given a great example there. But we need to be supporting those guys as well.
Tim's already called in. Tim, what would you like to add?
Well, I've been in the mining industry for over 30 years, and on and off, fly in, fly out. When I started in Canada, we'd be in the field for 3 months. And, of course, people in the armed forces have similar sorts of things, even longer stints. Now things are a bit better, and I did have a six-month contract, fly in, fly out, on a weekly basis. But I think one of the things the companies can do is be a little bit more careful of their commitment to the employees. It was supposed to be a six-month contract. After 4 weeks, they had a whole bunch of firings, got rid of a lot of people, including myself, probably just to meet budget by the end of the year, and coming at Christmas and physical stress, that sort of thing adds a huge burden to people.
Thanks very much, Tim. Do you agree with that, Matt? Do you think the industry is better than it was perhaps when you were doing FIFO?
I think it certainly is, and it's dangerous to draw comparisons with other professions, but because we can't dispute the fact that there is a problem here. Definitely, the conditions are getting a lot better for the guys in the field. There are brilliant camps out there. The rosters are more family-friendly, perhaps. Still fairly arduous, but 2-on-1's a lot better than the 3 months that people used to spend in the field. But, yeah, the conditions definitely are improving, but it's still dangerous to say, well, the soldiers do this and other people do that, because, I mean, we can't dispute the facts that there is a problem out there.
Sharon, on that problem, why is it that some people do and some people don't suffer high levels of psychological stress?
Yeah, Jess, that's a terrific question and a really important one, because a lot of the research in this area has sort of shown that there are differences in stress and distress, but haven't really unpacked why. And I think, so, you know, one third suffer distress, but one third actually are okay. And so we can learn a lot from that, because we can sort of statistically model what are the factors that shape who is suffering. And in fact, we have hundreds of pages on that very question in the report. But just to give some examples, sometimes it's about personal aspects. So there are some people who are just more able to cope with some of the demands of FIFO work. Sometimes it's about family circumstances. It's completely different if you have young children at home to, you know, being a young sort of single lad or woman on the site. But also, and I guess the point that I would really like to emphasise and drill down a bit on is that the choices that are made around aspects like the rosters, how long they are, which Matt's just alluded to, also the quality of accommodation, the support given from the supervisors, all of these factors and many, many more, we have shown statistically predict who is more likely to suffer from mental health. And I highlight these factors because it's possible to do something about it. I mean, we can't say we're not going to ever employ a FIFO worker who's got children. That would be discrimination, for example. So we can't really do much about that finding. But if we know that rosters, for example, affects the mental health of the FIFO workers, then that's something that can be addressed. And Matt just commented there that the rosters have improved. There's still a way to go, though. So there are still plenty of people working 4 weeks away and then 1 week home. And our analyses show very clearly that those people have higher rates of distress and poorer wellbeing.
And you recommended in the report the shorter roster schedules. Is there a reluctance of industry to do that, Sharon?
Well, I guess that sort of initiative could have some cost implications because you would be flying people back and forth.
Okay, but we're talking about people's lives and mental health, so you'd want to hope that companies are listening to, well, otherwise, I mean, I've read numerous reports now. Obviously, your report and this study was done on the back of a long-running parliamentary inquiry education and health standing committee report. I see a lot of reports gathering dust.
Yes.
And not necessarily a lot of action. So, I mean, how do we get industry to see that whilst there might be financial implications, the benefits are just enormous?
Well, and actually, let's even just question the financial costs. So it may well be that it is cost-effective, actually, as well. And I'm not saying that should be the only reason. I completely agree with you that people's lives are more important than anything else. But, in fact, if you really unpacked the cost benefits of providing family-friendly rosters, and you really cost the impact of this mental health and how it spreads and impacts on many people, I think you'd probably find that it is cost-effective. And, in fact, an analysis that a large consulting company did showed that every dollar that you invest in mental health interventions at work pays back at least double, and actually in the resource sector pays back fivefold. So for every dollar, $5.70 is generated back. So one thing we could potentially do is do some more serious sort of economic modelling of, if we were to change the rosters, what might be the actual, you know, cost savings that come from reduced mental health and attracting more people into the industry and all the cost things that might flow from that.
It's 18 past 10. You're listening to Focus, where we're talking about the impact of FIFO on resource workers, and particularly we're looking at the recommendations, 18 of them that came from a report that was handed down last week. It's been authored by a group of people, including from universities and across the industry, had input. So with me is Professor Sharon Parker. She's the lead author. And Matt Skeet, he worked FIFO as a driller for years and now manages FIFO drillers. Matt, you're speaking to us now in a very different predicament to years ago when you were working FIFO. How does your experience as a FIFO worker shape how you treat the FIFO drillers on your own books?
I think definitely I'm more empathetic to their situations, in that if they will request leave, they pretty well know they're going to get it, because my take on that is that if they've gone to the effort of applying for leave, there's a great reason why, and they're not going to be happy at work anyway. So that, while it causes some managerial issues from our end, definitely I am aware of their state of mind and the likelihood that their state of mind is not going to be great if they stay at work. So now, my former experience now has led me to grant that leave and try and provide a better work environment for them.
Good on you, Matt. Sarah's called in. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
What did you want to add to the conversation?
Look, my husband and I have been in the FIFO life for pretty much the last decade, and various rosters. So he's worked 4-1, 2-1, and more recently has had equal time. And I completely concur that the the rosters where you're only getting a week off and having unequal time off for your R&R. It's completely unsustainable. We see so much turnover in staff, lots of family breakdowns. Basically, when your partner comes home, it takes a couple of days for them to adjust back to normal life, and then a couple of days leading into going back to work, they're getting prepped for that. So one week off is really challenging. So we have a solid rule now that he only accepts work where it's equal time at home, especially now we've got our family.
How old are the kids now?
We have a 2.5-year-old and a 1-year-old, so only 18 months between the two, which was quite challenging when our second was due and my husband was expected to go back out to work. And there wasn't a lot of understanding that he wanted to be there for the birth and wanted to be there to support me, and he did experience bullying.
That's very sad. Do you think it would be a different experience now, given that we've had a few reports recommending? Do you think there's a greater awareness in industry that sort of treatment just isn't on?
Look, I don't think just the report is sufficient. I actually think the people in management, especially in the Perth offices who are dealing with rostering and managing their teams offshore, I think they need to have better training, and the gentleman who rang in, that's such a great point of view, but we haven't seen a lot of it. So I don't think it's enough to just think that the report's going to trickle down into some change in management leadership styles. I actually think that companies need to do more in terms of training. For example, my second child is only a year old, so we're not talking long ago. And basically my husband was threatened that he and his back-to-back would lose their job if he didn't get on the plane and go back to work as scheduled. And he was, thick-skinned enough to say, look, you can't make me choose between the job and seeing the birth of my child and supporting my wife. So, but a lot of people, like you say, like this report has said, the stress and the bullying, it's totally unacceptable.
That's a terrible story about the birth of your daughter, but thank you very much for sharing it, Sarah, and let's hope things improve. And in terms of you, Matt, I mean, did it get that bad for you at any point when you were working as a FIFO?
I know what she's saying. That does happen when, especially, you've got someone on site that's really keen to get off site, and then his back-to-back due to fly in for whatever reason doesn't make it. So that means that someone's got to fill that spot. So, yeah, I have seen it where the guy that's had to stay behind and fill the gap for the guy that's had to stay at home or decided to stay at home, then when he's back on site, yeah, there is a bit of bullying there.
So, Sharon, if the idea of changing rosters doesn't seem to be that easy to get all of industry on board straight away, what else can we do immediately to get on top of these issues?
Yeah, there's a whole raft of things, and in the report we actually make 18 recommendations, including what Sarah just mentioned there, in fact, that we do need to provide better training of the local leaders, the supervisors. As you know from the report, bullying was very high in this population, and 40% of the bullying came from supervisors themselves. So the very first thing we need to do with supervisors is make sure that their behaviour is appropriate and that they're not engaging in bullying, because that's going to obviously contribute to people's mental health challenges. So, but that's not all. It's not that they shouldn't just be bullying. They also play a critical role around support and providing a bit of latitude, letting people fly home when it's absolutely necessary, being a shoulder an ear that someone can listen to, for example. And we found that actually support from supervisors was a protective factor. And so people who felt that they had a good supervisor who they could go to and who would give them a bit of latitude when necessary, those people had better mental health. So we absolutely can be looking at training and developing our supervisors and managers to be providing a better environment around mental health.
It's 24 past 10. You're listening to Jess Strutt on the Focus program, where we're talking about the psychological distress amongst FIFO resource workers on the back of a new report which found it's quite prevalent and much more prevalent than in the non-FIFO workforce. And I'm joined by Matt Skeet. He is a former FIFO driller and also the lead author of that report. Sharon, on that issue, your report also touches on broader screening of workers for mental health issues. I can see the industry, I think industry is quite keen to jump on that, but I can imagine that workers might be a little worried about that.
We definitely did not recommend that.
Sorry, it might be me misinterpreting that, but that seems to be something industry is keen for.
Yeah, look, I think at the end of the day, there are also laws around fair hiring and what's legal, and that would be discriminatory, and I believe that would not be permitted by law. And I certainly would not advocate that. But what's behind an assumption like that is that a person is mentally unwell and then joins FIFO work. Actually, what our research shows and what others have shown and what all these experiences that we're hearing with people calling in are showing is that it's the demands of FIFO work itself that contribute to mental ill health. So that's what we need to focus on. We need to focus on what are those demands and how do we either reduce those demands. So, for example, we've been talking about making shorter rosters. That would reduce some of the demands and pressures of that work. But also how do we give people the resources to manage those demands better. And so we've been talking about, for example, providing or ensuring that supervisors are supportive. But we can go further and we can also look at the quality of the accommodation. So we found, for example, in the research that people had better mental health if they had permanent accommodation. Now, that might not be possible in all cases, but let's at least explore that question. Can we improve the quality of accommodation offered to FIFO workers? So I think we shouldn't be talking about screening for mental health. I think that's got the wrong thinking behind it and is not at all backed up by the evidence. We should be asking the question, look, how do we support workers and how do we manage the demands that they will face in what is, after all, a tough situation? I mean, any human being who's going to be away from their family and friends for long periods of time, working in very isolated conditions, is, you know, it's going to be difficult. So how do we support that and how do we give people the resources and so on that they need?
So if we're not going to screen, we do need, though, better monitoring of these health issues?
Yes, I think that's important.
So which was your recommendation too?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. So explain that to people.
Yeah, that's important. And, in fact, this is a wider issue, not just to FIFO workers, but because there actually is legislation that people should employers have a duty of care to their employees to protect them from risks, and what is increasingly important is that it's not just the physical risks but also the mental risks. So there is already legislation in place that employers should do this. I think that's what we've got to focus on, is what are the sorts of things that employers should be doing to protect people against that risk. And that includes monitoring what are those risks and who's suffering from them. So I think monitoring is very important. Screening is probably discriminatory. So a world of difference between those two things. And it's not monitoring in order to find who's distressed and kick them out. That's actually a lot of the comments that were made in interviews and also a finding from the survey is that people are feeling there's a lot of stigma around mental health, and they fear if they raise that they are struggling or that they have some needs, that they will no longer have a job. So these are the sorts of things I think that we need to focus on, not screening people to stop them getting the job in the first place.
And I think we've got Andrew here on the line. Andrew, what did you want to add?
Oh, a couple of observations. The first one is, surely when people go into FIFO work, their eyes are wide open. They're aware that, you know, the financial benefit of doing shift work is obviously why they're there. So they're looking for a certain standard of living with the income that they're able to earn. So, you know, going in there and thinking that, you know, I'm not going to be doing shift work or long stretches would probably be, in my mind, a little bit, blinkered. But the other observation I'd like to make is, having grown up in a mining town in the northwest for the first, you know, dozen years of my life, they were awesome places to be in the 70s and 80s. Recently I went back there and, you know, the town of 2,000 people had been let go. When I queried around, you know, what's going on with the hospital, there's a fence around it, there's no days a week, etc., the place had basically been left to rack and ruin. The answer was that shires weren't prepared to pour any money into it because basically companies like the big miners, etc., are responsible for the standards and upkeep of the town. And they're not going to pour more money into that when they can, you know, more efficiently do it with fly-in, fly-out workers. So you know, it's a twofold problem in that you're trying to keep communities together, families in one location, but it's not really doable because the standard of living at those particular locations has been let go. So a couple of observations. I'm all for mental health support, et cetera, but surely when people go into shift work or apply for those positions, they know what they're getting into.
We appreciate those comments and we will get a reaction to that in a moment.
This is Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
And we're talking today about FIFO workers, particularly the psychological distress caused to them. And I just wanted to ask Sharon to respond to Andrew's call before, because I think that is quite a broad community view, rightly or wrongly, that, hey, what are these guys and women whinging about? They earn big money. I'm not saying that's my opinion at all. I'm saying there is a bit of a perception out there to have that view. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I'm really glad to get the opportunity to respond to this. I mean, first of all, it's important to acknowledge there are benefits of FIFO work. People choose it because they know that it's going to help them financially. There are also, sometimes it means they have more long periods at home with their family. So FIFO workers definitely can identify some benefits. So we're not saying there's no benefits. What we're saying is there's some risks. And what we're saying is that there are things we can do to manage those risks. So, you know, this idea that it's okay because people have been paid a lot of money, so they should just be exposed to these risks. Not only is that in a legal perspective, would we say the same if it was asbestos risks? Would this, you know, there's asbestos in this work and, you know, it's fine, they paid big money? No, we wouldn't. We'd say that's a risk. We've got to make sure people have the right equipment and the gloves. And that's really what we're saying. We're saying that this sort of work has some risks, as other work often does as well. And we need, and they're known risks. They're well documented risks for mental health. So we can actually take some steps to mitigate and reduce those risks. That's what we're saying, and that's not only legally important. Going back to our occupational health and safety laws, which state that duty holders have the responsibility to protect workers from risks. So it's a legal requirement, but it's also you know, it's good working practices. It's going to result in people who are not as tired, who are people who are more interested in their work. It's going to help attract talent into those industries and so on. So I very strongly disagree with that point. The other idea is they've got their eyes wide open, this comment. Actually, I don't think FIFO workers often do. And one of our recommendations
is a strong theme of your report as well, they don't, in terms of planning for the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Not getting those golden handcuffs on.
Yeah, and that comes from, you know, surveying thousands of workers and talking to them. What happens is they often go into the work, perhaps without any sort of financial planning, without an exit strategy. They get locked into it with big mortgages and so on, and then feel sort of stuck, actually. And our research shows that the people who experience that sense of stuckness, that they're there, the expression is golden handcuffs, that they sort of now can't stop because they've got the big mortgages to pay and so on, they actually suffer some of the worst mental health in our study. So why not help prepare FIFO workers for this? Why not provide them with some financial planning up front? And more generally, you know, there's an enormous amount of strategies that people have shared of how they and their family cope, because families cope in different ways. Why not prepare our FIFO workers so they really are going into it knowing these are the challenges they're likely to face? Let's support them.
We're getting lots of texts and calls coming through. I'll just read out a couple because there's so many here. The screen is overwhelming me. I'm only new to this job, guys, but this is brilliant. Hi, I've done FIFO. The mining industry is the most degrading, insulting and pathetic industry one could ever find he or she involved with. Another here from Stephen. I've done FIFO for 5 years. I don't recommend it at all. Insecure work, get to site contracts, then changed. All the big resource companies offer personal help, but then as soon as someone asks a difficult question, they usually don't get flown back to. So I think we've sort of touched on that a little bit in terms of what Stephen's saying there, in terms of how, you know, it's different for how different people get treated. And I think we've got Renee on the phone there. Nope, I can't find her right now. I will
come
back.
If I can just comment on, have a go on that, Jess. Oh, you got someone?
Sorry. No, not right now. Go away. Go for it, Sharon.
I guess this is my point about managing the risks. Just because someone chooses to do FIFO work, they should not be subject to bullying and harassment. So this is my point. We know that that's a risk. Let's do something about it. Let's train the supervisors better. Let's make sure the consequences for bullying are greater, whatever it takes. So I think it's about addressing the known risks, of which bullying is one.
Matt, we were talking about the exit plan and the fact that people get stuck in a lifestyle, you know, a big spending lifestyle sometimes, and it's very hard once you're on the big salary and you've locked into that to get out of it. Was that something you saw a lot of yourself when you were working as a FIFO driller?
Yeah, very much so. It's very easy come, easy go with those sorts of salaries. And definitely the guys that are young and earning aren't equipped to manage their funds effectively, so that they're very hand-to-mouth, spending everything they get, great toys, and then moving on further in their life, so they're getting great mortgages as well. But it comes back to the issue of job security, where it's been mentioned a few times that people are locked, and of course it's going to drive your mental health if you have got all these financial commitments and you're not sure if your job's going to be there tomorrow.
So would the advice be then, I suppose, that we provide training in the area in terms of having an exit strategy before people move into FIFO, Matt? Do you think that's the best, you know, approaching it before it becomes a problem?
I think there's a culture change needed, but certainly something like financial planning and training would be a great assistance. It's just the logistics of how to do these things. You've got to start somewhere, I guess, but it's a big workforce. They are all over the place. It's hard to capture people to get these sorts of initiatives completed, but definitely it's something to look at.
Drugs and alcohol, you touched on it at the start, Sharon. Just how big an issue is that? I mean, I know that even in this profession of journalism, drugs and alcohol can be a coping mechanism. In many industries it can. Is it, you know, can it become a vicious cycle because you've got the money, you've got the disposable income? Is that something that showed up in the, you know, expansive survey that you did?
Yeah, so we found that FIFO workers engage in more risky drinking behaviour than benchmarks and norms. So 61% of FIFO workers consume more than two drinks a day, which is considered risky drinking on average. And that figure for the benchmark sample, which is basically a very similar sample in terms of demographics and job, but not FIFO, that figure was 43%. So significantly more, and for Australian norms, by the way, was 26%, if you want to compare yourself.
So, yes.
but, yeah, so look, and similar statistics around the use of drugs in terms of greater use of illicit drugs, also more use of tranquilizers and sleeping pills, which probably isn't too much of a surprise given the issues around having to cope with shift work sometimes and fatigue and so on. So, again, just like with the psychological distress findings, we modelled what are the factors that predict alcohol and drug use. Because as you say, Jess, it can be. It's not always, you know, but it can be a coping strategy. When people are suffering, it can be a way of alleviating some of that suffering. I think the alcohol and drug use is important in another way, and that is this whole research was initiated because of concern about suicide of FIFO workers. And I mentioned already that FIFO workers do experience higher levels of suicidal thoughts. If we combine that with risky drinking, then you see why we have potentially a problem.
Absolutely.
Because drinking can sort of lower, you know, it can create more impulsivity and things like that. So it's not a healthy combination, let's put it that way.
And which again goes back to why it needs to be taken so seriously, because the consequences can be so tragic.
Absolutely.
Renee's called in. Morning, Renee.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. What's your story?
Yeah, so I'm absolutely sensitive to those whose experiences might not be positive, particularly reflecting on some of the calls that you've had this morning coming in. But I think sort of our personal circumstance is that, you know, FIFO, it does work for us. You know, it's absolutely a matter of choice, and I think, you know, with the situation, definitely doesn't work for everybody. And I think it's really good that this morning's discussion is really focusing on that everyone's circumstance is unique, and that's really important to remember. And it does work for some and it doesn't work for others, and not detracting from the focus within the resources sector. You know, I think it's really important that the conversation about positive mental health and wellbeing is just, this research helps inform all sectors and all divisions of any industry, really.
Absolutely. And Renee, how does it work for you and your family?
So our obviously I can only comment on our personal circumstance, but
they're always the best, I think, Renee. Thank you.
I think I'm you know, we spent 8 years living in the Pilbara, so we had a, you know, really lovely time living regionally in the Pilbara, and recently I was relocated back to Perth for a great opportunity for my role. So I'm a full-time professional working mum, and, you know, it was our joint decision as a family that upon that move back to Perth, what was the best outcome and the best situation for our family and for my husband Andy, the best opportunity for us at this point in our lives was for him to work FIFO. You know, we were faced with the reality of him returning to a role that he did prior to us moving to the Pilbara, which actually would have equated him working 6 days a week, 10-hour days, whereas with little family time, and particularly cumulatively when you map that against me choosing to work full-time, it's our family choice. So him working FIFO actually provides us both an opportunity to participate in our boys' lives. And, you know, he knows the kindy parents just as much as I do, and he's done canteen volunteering at the school. I haven't yet, admittedly. But for us, at this point, it absolutely provides us both that opportunity to be involved in our children's lives, absolutely aware of pressure points, and we just have that self-awareness and make sure that we work together and make it work and be really conscious that when those pressure points start to bubble up, that if there comes a time where it doesn't suit our family situation anymore, we'll then, you know, do our best to change that. But for the moment, it works, particularly supporting what we both want to achieve for our family.
I'm glad it's working for someone. And Sharon has a point to make in relation to what you've said.
First of all, I think, Renee, it's terrific that you're highlighting it can work. And I don't want this report to convey the message that it can't work. And that's really going back to that early point that, you know, that one third of FIFO workers are not suffering from distress. So it's great that you've shared that experience. And in our interviews with 40 FIFO workers and their partners, there were many strategies that people put forward as ways that they sort of make it work, I guess. And the one that you've mentioned, which came up as absolutely critical, and it won't be a surprise, and that is about having really good communication with your partner, and recognising that there are times that things go a bit awry, and being able to communicate. Also, you know, partners talked about things like recognising sometimes when the FIFO worker comes back, that person needs to have a bit of space. Sometimes they're very fatigued and so on. But having that great communication is a really important strategy, I think, that families will need to develop if they haven't got it before they go into FIFO work. Getting that set up, those communication channels, is really important.
Good point, Sharon. And Raymond has been so patient calling in and waiting for a while. Raymond, good morning. No, he's given up. He waited for so long. I think he had too much. It's my fault. It's not your fault. Thanks for the call anyway, Raymond. Matt, did you agree with that point?
Yeah, I think so. I've seen a more successful scenario than the opposite. I've been obviously very privileged because definitely not a third of my workforce, as far as I'm aware, are struggling like this. And indeed, on sites that I've worked on, I'm shocked by the statistic. But that being said, we're working on smaller sites where there's more of a family environment than the bigger ones where perhaps people get lost.
I also think sometimes people are not necessarily sharing how they're feeling.
Correct.
And we had a lot of comments in interviews and so on about people fearing admitting that they were struggling because they thought that then they wouldn't get another job or that, you know, they'd be sent home on the plane. So I think sometimes people are not necessarily, you know, they'll write it in a confidential survey, but they won't necessarily disclose it to their manager or their peers is part of the issue, I think.
Yeah, I still think that it's dangerous as well to pick on the big miners for the scenario that they're putting their workforce into, because they really are trying. A lot of them have got equal share rosters happening. They are conscious of it and they are making efforts. It's just a big wheel to turn for them, I think. And
we need to recognise that and celebrate that. And I fully appreciate, and we work with some mining and construction companies that are absolutely doing these sorts of things, and that's fantastic. The statistic still remains, though, and so basically more needs to be done across the board, more universally, I think.
Anna, it's 47 minutes past 10. The news will be coming up. You're with Jess Strutt on Focus, and today we're talking about FIFO, particularly a new report that has found a high proportion of FIFO resource workers do experience psychological distress and other forms of bullying and other bits of anguish in terms of separation from families and a whole host of issues. James has called in. Morning, James.
Oh, good morning.
What did you want to add?
I've been listening today. It's a fascinating discussion. I actually work for an iron ore company, and I just really wanted to make a major point, which is things aren't really going to change to a point where it is, you know, as good as it can get until the large companies really start being honest and transparent, not only with their employers, but with the public. And I just want to leave for discussion 2 points. Firstly, post the report that came out, internally with the company I worked, there was almost immediately an internal communique, which, to be honest, suggested there was nothing to see here, that they were leading the charge, if you will, with you know, improving FIFO life. And you know, the report in itself really didn't cause them any concerns, or they felt that it didn't apply to them. Now, that simply is rubbish. And the second thing is, there's an alarming number of suicides happening on mine sites around Western Australia. I have engagement with some organisations in the Pilbara through the church and what have you, who deal with these scenarios. And the number is alarming, and it's certainly not becoming public. So I think the point I just want to make is, you know, yes, progress is happening, but until, you know, BHP, Rio and everyone else starts being honest and transparent with themselves and the public, we're really not going to get to the bottom of it.
And we're getting, thanks very much for the call there, James, and we're getting plenty of texts. Hi, Jess. I and my wife were FIFO before the word was even invented. For 15 years on offshore gas oil rigs, and I shake my head about this conversation. Don't do the work if you cannot handle the separation. Our only means of communication was via airmail letters. No Skype, no phones, etc. There's a real range of views here, though. What have we got? My husband has been FIFO for 26 years with the same company and no loss of job. We didn't go for the massive mortgage or the flash car. We made sure we could afford to live if the FIFO ended. Well, that's very wise, and a strong theme that's come through Sharon and others' work here in this report. Four children are now adults. Dad knew the teachers and did help around the home, spent time with the kids and still does. So it seems like it is, you know, everyone's story is obviously different, and it's very hard. We really can't simplify this down. It is a complex issue. And I just want to get to a bit of the government's reaction. As I said, it seems like they're going to take more of a carrot than a stick approach at this stage. The Mental Health Minister, Roger Cook, also the Deputy Premier he is, he responded when this report that was commissioned by the government was handed down. Here's a little of what he had to say.
We will soon come out with new guidelines, a code of practice for mentally healthy workforce places, workplaces for FIFO workers. That's some work that's being undertaken by Minister Johnson at the moment. We're looking to make sure that this research informs that code of practice, and we will see what other regulatory measures need to be put in place.
And before we go to get a response to what the Mental Health Minister was saying, Raymond has called in and I've got in there. Raymond, what did you want to add?
Well, I've been 40 years, or over 40 years, as a fly-in, fly-out worker. And the thing that I've noticed that when you apply for a job, it's the company is prepared to pay for your induction and everything. but they're not prepared to delve into semi-personal things like, is your wife happy with you taking a job? What about you? What's your mindset on it? It's a mindset thing. People think that the money's there, I'll go up and get it. When they get up there, they find loneliness and sadness with being away. I went through that for a period of time. I was working 2 months on and a month off. It's a long time without any contact with your family. And I think the company should do more about looking into that. And instead of employing somebody because they need them, employ somebody that they think's going to stay and do the job and do it safely.
Thanks very much, Raymond, and thanks for your patience as I learn how to press all the buttons in here. It's a bit different to television. Now, just back to what Roger Cook, the mental health minister who handed down this report, released it last week. He was talking about the government adopting more of a carrot rather than a stick approach, and that the government's sort of drafting at the moment a voluntary code of conduct for mentally health workplaces, both for FIFO resource and construction sectors. And now he has warned that whilst it's voluntary, if industry doesn't improve practices, that code could be made mandatory. Sharon, you've interviewed more miners than I've ever met. What do you think? Is that the right move?
Well, I certainly think a code of conduct is a good start. But as with all codes, it comes down to the implementation. And how are we going to make sure that these practices are actually implemented? I think it actually comes back a little bit to what James was talking about. You know, we really need to actually look on the ground and see what's working, because it's not enough for organisations to say, yes, I've ticked that box, I've ticked that box. It really comes down to what's happening on the ground. I do just want to remind people that there is some work health and safety legislation on this topic. And this is that, as far as is reasonably practical, employers should not expose people to health and safety risks. What's happening more broadly is a recognition that health includes mental health. So there is some legislation here, and we are seeing a growing incidence of litigation and people enacting this law. So I think that will, you know, that there is a stick there, I guess.
Okay.
Might not be the perfect stick, but it's a stick. But I think the carrot is important too. I don't think it's about carrot or stick. I think it's about both. There are enormous benefits to be gained from treating people well at work. And I think it's about encouraging those as well as, you know, using the stick. Because what we don't want is a sort of compliance culture where all the boxes are ticked, but there's no real change on the ground. We want real, genuine change on the ground.
So a bit of carrot and a bit of stick, and a reminder, because we are dealing with a large issue here of mental health. If you or someone you know does need help, we always urge you to call Lifeline on 13 11 14. That's 131114. Matt, just to finish off, I just wanted to thank you very much, Matt Skeet, who has joined us from the ABC's Albany studio, and also to the lead author on this very important report on the impact of FIFO arrangements on, you know, the mental health, I suppose, and well-being of resource FIFO workers. So Professor Sharon Parker, Matt Skeet, a former FIFO worker, many thanks for joining that discussion.